I did get an opportunity to see some of the footage, of course, on some media coverage outlets there, and it does look pretty chaotic. Obviously, as you mentioned, Scott, we had something similar to that back on May 29th, 2020, when we had our riots here in Fargo. And so, yeah, certainly what we see playing out there is a group of agitators and then of some conformists who are following them. That are just looking to cause chaos and hurt people. And certainly as law enforcement, we understand the Constitution and people's rights, and everyone has their First Amendment right, that right to free speech and right to assembly, but nowhere in the Constitution or in those rights does it say that people can become violent. It says that it needs to be peaceful. And these things have become violent. And so when it becomes violent, then it turns from an assembly to from a protest to a riot, and now it's become a riot, and that changes things, because then at that point, law enforcement's number one goal is to protect life and protect property. And so that's certainly what they're dealing with in these situations right now. And it's going to be a tough couple days for those law enforcement officers. We hope that that no one gets hurt, but certainly with what I observed, there's going to be people that get hurt.
What defines violence? When does it cross the line into violent protests?
When we start breaking that rule of law. Like I said, people have the opportunity to assemble and express their thoughts, their speech, as long as that's done peaceful. But when it starts crossing that line of people lighting fires, starting vehicles on fire, vandalizing things, breaking things, throwing things, trying to injure other citizens, officers, things like that, that's when we've crossed the line. And I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Scott, but when we had the riots on May 29th, after that, we had that press conference. I'm actually going to send you the footage of my press conference comments, so you can look at those if you have time, if you remember those. But I talked a lot about these same things that we're talking about today, that, initially people were peaceful, but then after that 6 p.m. mark on that date, it started turning violent. We had officers that were hit with bricks and rocks, and they sustained injuries. We had businesses that were vandalized. And after that, when I drove down to the press conference the next morning, and business owners were trying to paint off of their businesses, they're sweeping up the broken glass from the windows that were broken out, it was very disheartening. Some of these people that that's their livelihood, that's their business, that's how they make money, that's how they live, that's how they survive. And then we have people, for no reason, breaking their stuff, vandalizing it, stealing from them. And so I took it upon myself at the next legislative session to bring a bill forward, and it passed. And it was that if people vandalize people's property during a riot, it changes it from a misdemeanor to a Class C felony. And so we do have that on the books now. I was happy to work with some legislators to do that. Austin Schauer was one of the bill sponsors. And so, yeah, it's just it's disheartening when people want to destroy other people's property or hurt other people during these types of situations.
And imagine a governor and a mayor in the middle of that, unable to call it what it is, claiming it's a peaceful protest and acting as though the people enforcing the law are the bad guys. It's amazing. If you had an ICE operation in Cass County, what would the support level be from yourself, Cass County, or other local law enforcement? What's the typical in a situation like that?
Well, the first thing is I think that we all need to have good communication as far as law enforcement is concerned. And if ICE has actually done some operations here, and they've communicated with us very well, so that we're all on the same page. We understand what they're doing, where they're going to be, what type of action they're taking, who they're looking for, and things of that nature. So I think it all needs to start off with good communication, so we're all on the same page, so we understand what everyone's trying to do. Obviously, what ICE is doing is they're enforcing federal law. We can't do that as our sheriff's office here. It's immigration laws pertinent to ICE. But certainly when they're doing that, there's a public safety aspect to that. And our concern here at the sheriff's office is always public safety. So we're always going to help where we think that there could be a public safety issue for everyone involved. our community, law enforcement, and the suspect. So we would assist to make sure that we can maintain public safety. What I can tell you is that if you do have listeners out there just kind of wondering some of these things, we have come across people in Cass County that are in the country illegally. And when we do that, what we do is we slow the situation down, we detain that person, and we contact Border Patrol or ICE agents to let them know that we've come across someone who's in the country illegally because they are breaking the law, rule of law. And our number one concern at that point is to really identify this person to see what kind of a criminal background they have, right? Because they're in our community and we don't have access to background information on some of these individuals that come from different countries. And of course, ICE and Border Patrol, they do. So as the sheriff, just like we dealt with our situation out in Apsaraka, I'd like to know who's in my community. Is this a dangerous person? Is this someone that's wanted for a number of charges, violent charges? I want to know that because, again, my job is public safety, keeping our community safe. And so, but where I was going with this, Scott, is that we do contact ICE and Border Patrol and let them know we're in contact with these individuals. And if these individuals right now, because ICE is so busy, if these individuals are not violent, they don't have a violent history, sometimes ICE and Border Patrol is just asking us to gather further information from these individuals, and maybe later on they'll come back and visit with them. But really their focus right now is on the violent people in our community. So when ICE is out looking for these individuals, at least in our area here from my experience, they're looking for people that are wanted, that have violent tendencies, have some sort of criminal history, and they need to be apprehended. And so I think that there's some false narratives out there. And unfortunately, some of them are coming from political leaders, like you mentioned. And that's to me, that's carelessness. That's causing people to get wound up. That's agitating people when the proper information isn't being put out. And when that happens, that puts communities in danger. It puts citizens in danger, and it puts law enforcement in danger. And that's carelessness. That's using that type of a situation for a political message. And I don't care for those types of things. I'm concerned about public safety, and that gets people riled up in that direction. And so I think everyone needs to work together and get the information out on what's actually happening, and maybe that will help calm some of these situations down a little bit.
President Trump yesterday specifically mentioned some of the actions of these protesters spitting in the face of law enforcement. He said, you spit, you hit. What's the typical rules of engagement there?
Well, anytime that you have a civil unrest situation, the number one thing that we need to all take into consideration as far as law enforcement tactics and how we deal with these things is making sure that we have a combined, concerted, tactical effort on the side of law enforcement. I mean, some of the situations that I observed on some of the media coverage is officers were greatly outnumbered. And when that happens, you have to, for maybe a lack of better terms, pick and choose your battles until you can kind of get control of the situation or you get enough resources there to handle making more of those arrests. And so, you know, there are times where law enforcement can get on the scene and we have people causing chaos and doing things like you mentioned, spitting, throwing things at officers. They might not have the resources at the time to deal with that. And so really it's a matter of making sure that the proper resources are there and that you're putting forth a good tactical effort to start making those arrests and start to gain control of those situations. Just so you know and your listeners know here, we do mobile field force training yearly at the Cass County Sheriff's Office. We've been doing that since 2020 to make sure that we're continually ready here. In fact, we just completed our training on May 19th and the 22nd, and we're currently putting together a video that we're going to be releasing to the public to show them our level of readiness. We have approximately 140 licensed officers that are trained in mobile field force. We have a very robust extraction team, a team that can cut people away if they decide to attach themselves to vehicles and things of that nature to cause disruption that way. And we have a mobile booking team and transport team, which most mobile field force entities don't have. And what I mean by that, or agencies, I should say, that have mobile field force, is with our jail connection, we want to be able to do booking procedures and transports from the scene with a mobile booking and transport team.
Excellent. You're thinking of everything. Yeah,
typically what can happen in these situations, Scott, is if we have law enforcement officers out in the mobile field force line and they start making those arrests, they're going to have to transport
clear
them to
it
jail.
Out.
And
I love it.
To,